This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and who hasn't wanted eating to be a more enjoyable, stress-free experience where you feel empowered and happy and healthy, not stressed out or deprived or too full or guilty or all those things? Well, today we have an incredible person here, Sue Van Rays, who's going to help you find peace and love around food with her beautiful new book. And it really is beautiful. It looks good enough to eat. And it's called Food and Freedom: Discover Your Personal Recipe to Eat, Think, and Live Well. What a gorgeous title. Before we meet Sue, let me tell you a little bit more about her. Sue Van Rays is a functional nutritionist. She's a food psychology specialist, wellness expert, yoga instructor, love that, and founder of Bolder Nutrition. She has extensive experience as a featured health writer for the Chopra Center, and her work has been featured in People, The Sacred Science, Natural Solutions Magazine, Origin Magazine, and Elephant Journal. Sue also hosts the podcast Satiate and leads wellness and yoga retreats in Colorado, Costa Rica, Bali, and virtually. She lives in Boulder, Colorado. Sue Van Rays, welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Thank you so much for having me, Judy. I am so excited to be with you and to have this conversation.
Sue, first of all, congratulations on your beautiful new book, Food and Freedom. It's so much more than a book about food, which is what I first thought when I saw it. It's really a manual on how to live a happier, healthier, and more blissful life. And you divided the book into 8 different chapters, or ingredients, as you expertly call them, with the foundational ingredients that have guided you in your journey. Before we dive in, can you tell us a little bit more about your brainchild, Food and Freedom, and how it all evolved?
Sure. Yes. Thank you so much. Food and Freedom has been such an incredible journey for me, and really an opportunity to dive deeper into some of the different tenets of my work and kind of anchor them with lots of research and go really into a place in my own experience that I've been able to share a lot of my own stories through the book, as a way to sort of give people permission to create their own way of sharing their stories. Because I do find that it's such a deep connection point when we can share our stories, and it really helps to feel connected to something bigger, like that we all have a common human experience to some degree. And when we start talking about the actual act of eating and how to best nourish ourselves, I was just so happy to see how this book unfolded, which often feels like it has a mind of its own. And I've been saying lately that I feel like this book wrote me rather than me writing it, because there was so much that came through that was surprising. And I really am so excited to share it with so many people who need it, because in my world, I see so many folks that are feeling out of balance or stressed or overwhelmed or overloaded or just confused about how to best feed our bodies. And there's so much misinformation out there that I end up having conversations with people who have just tried so many things and so many often externalized approaches to eating. And so this book is really my offering and my way of being of service in this food space and in the space for women to really learn how to cultivate more self-trust, more self-compassion, more self-love, so that they can really create a more peaceful experience with food and with life, which are so interconnected.
So synonymous.
Yeah. It's just been such an incredible journey from the get-go. And I'm really enjoying having this book out in the world. And I've been having so much fun connecting with people like you and hearing feedback from some of the readers. And it's just been an incredible gift in my life and in my work.
So incredible. Congratulations again on it. And I love, and you just touched on this, that you include a lot of personal stories in the book from your childhood and beyond. There's moments where you reflect on how the things you ate and the activities that you did as a child impacted how you felt throughout the day, like your sugary breakfast cereals. I was wondering as I was reading that if it was Lucky Charms or Captain Crunch. I was having all kinds of wonderful memories of my own cereal childhood. But you also talk about lovely food memories like your grandmother's heavenly ginger sparkle cookies. And I'm wondering where this all started for you. What led you to have this fascination with food and to want to work as a functional nutritionist and a food psychology specialist?
Yeah, well, thank you for that beautiful introductory question. And I just want to say, first of all, that it wasn't Lucky Charms, but it was more of the like non-sugary, sugary cereals.
Yes, yes,
so
I get
they
it.
They were considered the healthy ones,
yeah.
Just to be clear. But, you know, my food journey, as I tell the stories of in Food and Freedom, actually started with some of those ways that I was eating that were creating a lot of imbalance in my body. And I was incredibly sensitive to sugar. And I was a competitive gymnast for my whole childhood, all the way through college. And so I was basically on a blood sugar roller coaster that left me really feeling out of whack most of the time because of those sugary breakfasts that were so common in the 70s and 80s and the fat-free movement, which was kind of also taking root at that time.
Nice.
So, you know, not eating much fat and eating a lot of sugars was really hard on me, but I really had undiagnosed hypoglycemia for my entire childhood and did not know what it was until I was in my early 30s. And it was really a major aha moment for me to actually have a name for what I'd been going through for 30 years of eating food and really just feeling totally out of whack, feeling like I could never get my body to feel completely satiated, feeling like I was always kind of frantic with food because my blood sugar was crashing a lot. As a gymnast, even back in those days, we were taught to eat healthy. And what that looked like then was, you know, avoiding a lot of junk food and soda. But we never really addressed anything much deeper than that. And so food was top of mind for me for really most of my life, because when we're undernourished or when our blood sugar is dropping and we feel those really intense hunger sensations or frantic need for food, you know, it really puts food top of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking about food a lot. I was constantly like snacking and trying to really find a way to nourish myself, you know, unconsciously, just as a young kid. So when I found myself enrolling in my master's degree after an undergraduate in biology and kind of telling my family and friends that I was going to get a master's degree in holistic nutrition, you know, there was a lot of people that were just kind of nodding their head because they had seen me as very food focused throughout my whole life. And as I started to learn more about the science of food, I've been really so fortunate to be able to work with my hypoglycemia in a way that is much more stable and really not problematic anymore for me. Mm-hmm. But I do think it was a really important part of my origin story around my work because it really led me to want to understand the body better and how our body chemistry is impacted by food. And it really became a passion of mine that I now am so happy to share with others.
It's fantastic. You say in the introduction of the book that we are fed not just by the food on our plates, but by many other aspects of our lives. We're fed by many other aspects. Beautiful. Can you explain more about how that is the case?
Yeah. You know, what I've seen a lot in my work is that when we are not fed by the other aspects of our lives, such as things that are inspiring to us or adventurous or leading us to a place of deeper connection with ourselves or in connection with others and all the different layers of our outside lives, what I've noticed is we often take out some of that emptiness on our relationship with food.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a really important relationship between personal fulfillment and our relationship to eating. And so when we start to look at the other places in our life where maybe we are not satiated as a person, where maybe we're not living our dreams or we're not following our heart, or we're shutting down, or we're checking out of the ways in which, you know, we can be there for ourselves. I've found that those places really need love and attention to help us bring balance back to our relationship to food. Because if food is our only source of pleasure, you know, we can take that to a far extreme and take that way out of balance. And while I'm 100% in support of having pleasure with our eating, I do find that if we are not creating a life that we love living in other areas, food takes the brunt a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And so this book and my work is about our relationship to food and our relationship to life, and really how they're metaphorically very connected. Mm-hmm. And that has been a really incredible sort of platform for me to help folks improve their health, but really taking health not just about the food that we put into our mouths, but so much more about how we live our daily lives.
Absolutely. And I'm going to get to this later on, but there's a fabulous thing at the end of the book, and I'm going to save this for closer to the end of the interview, where you ask people to write up their own recipe for themselves based on their hearts and their minds and their souls and their bodies. And I'm going to tell you all more about this after, but it's brilliant because it custom tailors this whole book to every single individual reading it, where you get your own recipe for how to feed all parts of yourself, not just your body. Am I getting that right? We'll get to that. But it's just,
absolutely,
it was one of my favorite
I'm
things.
I'm excited. Good. I'm so excited for that part of the conversation.
Me too. So there's quotes throughout the book, there's tips, there's techniques, there's so many prompts. Like, this is just, it's a beautiful book, but it's also very user-friendly. It really makes you believe that you can change your relationship to food and all of the other areas that might need help in your life. It's very inspirational. And the quote that resonated with me was from one of my favorite people to quote, and that's Mother Teresa. She writes, and you quote, "The hunger for love is much more difficult to remove than the hunger for bread." How does this relate to your whole journey for anyone who wants to find more peace and love around nourishing themselves?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite quotes as well, Judy. And I just really think it speaks volumes to how important it is for us to develop a healthy and loving relationship with ourselves. And our relationship to food is so central to that, because it's the way in which we nourish our bodies. It's one of the most primal relationships that we have. And yet we often put it so far down on our list of priorities. And we put so many other people in ahead of our own self-care. Nice. And while it's wonderful to be a loving and thoughtful person in the world, my belief is that if we don't fill up our own cups, you know, we're pouring from an empty cup, we don't have a lot left to give. And what I love about this quote is that we can really see that there's a bigger issue here that we're often not addressing when it comes to the different ways that we're out of balance or even disordered around our relationship to eating and to food and to body. Mm-hmm. And some of that has to do with this very primal relationship to self. Mm-hmm. And I often like to think of it as how we are actually in attachment with others through attachment theory. And we can start to see some of the patterns that might be originating in our very early days with our primary caregivers, and how that might impact our relationship to self and our relationship to food as we grow older. And it's really profound to see in the research now that there's a lot coming through around different kinds of insecure attachment styles and the relationship to women with eating disorders, and how they're seeing that there's a really often correlation with anxious attachment, disorganized attachment, and avoidant attachment. Mm-hmm. And it makes perfect sense to me, because when we think about the very first ways that we're connecting with others, especially with our primary caregivers, is that we need to be fed. Mm-hmm. And how that looked or felt for us as young babies is one of the ways in which we sort of learned how to relate to ourselves as well. Mm-hmm. There's a very important relationship there. And so as we start to notice this pattern within ourselves, you know, we can start to look at where we want to focus on deeper levels of healing with how we relate to ourselves and, of course, how we relate to others. But if we start with this relationship to self first, I really believe that everything else we do is going to be so much more graceful and so much more easeful because we've got that really strong anchor back to the most important relationship we have.
Every diet coach, weight loss coach, nutritionist needs to hear what you just said because this is so important because it doesn't matter what you do in terms of food and exercise and wellness and all these wonderful things, if you don't have that basic common denominator, that foundation to the building that you've just said, it's really quite brilliant. And it's so true. And it can help so many people, which is so wonderful. You also have a very powerful line at the beginning of the book where you say, it's time to take the patriarchy off our plates and out of our mirrors. What did you mean by this?
Wow. Yes. I don't think anyone else has asked me about that yet, but I love talking about this and it felt a little edgy when I wrote it, but my editor loved it. And I was like, okay, we're going to leave that in. It kind of just came out, but you know, it's really like interesting to me to see how we've been conditioned in our lives as women and to notice the places where we've been taught and told in some cases to shut down parts of ourselves. And it's really unfortunate that we've had to conform the ways we eat, how we look, how we show up in the world, you know, the various other layers of our lives that we have been taught to repress because of our very patriarchal society. And in the research, you can see that every year there's a different trending body size. Right? Just that in itself is ludicrous to me because as women, we're supposed to just be able to match up with what's trending in both how we look, in the eating styles that we're exploring, in how our bodies are shaped and our body weight, and also just in the ways in which we are prioritizing, you know, other people over ourselves. And so I believe that there's an awakening that's happening with the sacred feminine that is an opportunity for us to rewrite this story and to remember, because I do believe that it is a remembering, to remember our power and to remember our intuition, to remember our connection to divine wisdom and our own souls. And with that intact, I believe we would be learning as well how to feed ourselves in a more sacred, in a more divine way that really honors the truth of what we need as women. And so as I see this repression showing up in different ways, you know, with people that I know, with my community, with my clients, it is being passed down generation after generation for the last few thousand years that has really led us further and further from the truth because we've, you know, gotten further and further from the time where we actually did feel this power in ourselves. And it's really time to make a shift because we have a lot at stake. You know, we have our health at stake. We have the collective ways that women are treated all around the world at stake. And I feel that it's so important to start to peel back the layers and remember that we have everything we need on the inside. We just have to learn how to translate that in a way that we can honor ourselves more.
Wow. This is some pretty deep, profound stuff that people need to hear. And yet repairing a relationship with food can take a lifetime, as you know, and for most, it has taken a lifetime. It can be very overwhelming. It can take, I'm thinking now of someone that I've worked with, it can take a huge emotional and mental toll on an individual and individuals. What do you recommend for someone who is just starting to work on all of this, who's just beginning this journey? Maybe they've picked up your book. They want to finally start really repairing their relationship with food. Where do they begin?
That's a great question. So it's interesting to explore. There's many, many layers of our relationship to food that are all important places to unearth some of the deeper patterns that we have within our habitual automatic behaviors. Mm-hmm. But I believe that if we can start at the beginning, and the beginning to me is through balancing our biochemistry,
yeah,
and bringing ourselves into a healthy blood sugar state, because so much gets solved there, some of which we might even feel is unrelated. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen many women who come into my office and are telling me about, I'm a sweet tooth and I don't know how to stop eating the sugar, and I'm addicted to like my afternoon sweet treats and my after dinner sweet treats on the couch and such. And we all have cravings at times, as the book describes, and as you and I both know, that have different meanings and come up for different reasons. But one thing that I've found, for example, is like balancing our blood sugar will right away start to amend some of those really intense sugar cravings that have told us, or that we've been taught, that we are a sweet tooth. Where what I've seen happen is just with some tweaks within how we are creating a meal based on different macronutrients and protein and fat and healthy carbohydrates, and including lots of plants and lots of non-starchy vegetables, it's really interesting to see that that identity of being a sweet tooth isn't actually real. Mm-hmm. It's an imbalance within our blood sugar. Mm-hmm. And there's so many things that happen even within emotional eating, mm-hmm. or the ways in which our brain chemistry is responding to food. Mm-hmm. So as we bring ourselves back into balance, we're going to notice our thoughts improve. Mm-hmm. We're going to notice our mood improve. We're going to notice some of the ways that we feel emotionally overwhelmed. We're going to develop more resiliency within our emotional body. Mm-hmm. We're going to notice our cravings improve. We're going to notice that we have maybe some more space for pleasure and joy in our lives. And it really starts with the biochemistry of mm-hmm. the body. And so when I don't start there, it's like I'm missing the most foundational building block to go from that makes everything else that we do much easier. Mm-hmm. All the other layers of healing happen so much more gently and easefully when we are starting with a balanced biochemistry and stable blood sugar.
You write in the book that, you know, the person that goes on their way home from work and stops to get the red Twizzlers, that they feel they need that. But if they actually had that balance in their blood sugar and were doing all these things that you're talking about, even the picture of the plate that you have in the book, it's wonderful. I don't know why I've heard of this before, but I've never seen it so well put together visually of, you know, half the plate is the veggies and then one third is the protein and the, you know, and the fruits and the, and it just, it's all, and then the carbs. And it just, you see it all. And I think if people just have a roadmap, they might be able to actually do this. Mm. So what are the 7 simplest ways to balance your blood sugar?
Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break, more with Finding Your Bliss and Sue Van Raise when we come back. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, we are back. This is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And just before the break, I was asking you, Sue, about the 7 simplest ways to balance your blood sugar.
Yeah, so balancing your blood sugar is 100% going to be a meal by meal experience. And I think that's a really important thing for people to know, because what happens often is we think, oh, well, I'll just do that later today. And I'll just take care of my blood sugar. I'll just eat protein for dinner. And I won't worry about, you know, doing it in the morning or doing it earlier in the day. And what happens is when we don't focus on something in real time, our blood sugar can take the hit. Our blood sugar is a real-time measure of what we're eating. Yes. And so it does happen meal by meal. So yeah, there's some really important strategies to consider. The first one is 100% keep your protein levels high at every meal. If you look at your plate, can you find the source of protein, and can it be a feature of your plate? Because protein is going to help blunt the blood sugar spike, or another way of saying that is elongate the blood sugar curve and help you to stay in a stable blood sugar zone in between meals. Mm. So that's the first point, and the very most important to look at on your plate is, are you getting, whether it be a plant-based source of protein and a healthy animal-based source of protein, there's many different eating styles and many different people's preferences that are all welcome here, but that you are ensuring that you have that macronutrient on your plate at every meal. Similarly, and often included with a healthy protein is a healthy fat. When we include a healthy, whole, natural fat in our meals, sometimes it's embedded in our salmon, like the oils in the salmon or something like that. Sometimes if we're eating vegetarian, we might need to add fat separately, like through half of an avocado or some olive oil or something that's going to help to include that macronutrient. Mm-hmm. We will also notice we stay satiated longer. Mm-hmm. And the glycemic index, or the amount of sugar in our meals, will go down. And so that's another really important macronutrient to work with. And then similarly, carbohydrates right now in the media are kind of getting a bad rap. And I think it's because there's some confusion around what is a good carbohydrate and what is something that's ultra processed. Mm-hmm. If we can choose whole carbohydrates, or as close to whole, meaning in their whole form, mm-hmm. such as a whole grain or a healthy fruit or a starchy vegetable, then we're going to take much less of a blood sugar hit than if we're including more ultra processed carbs like crackers and pastas and cookies and scones and bagels and that sort of thing. So getting a healthy carbohydrate is going to lower the blood sugar impact. Anytime a carbohydrate is processed, it has a higher blood sugar impact. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, another step in that same journey is also including a healthy fiber in your meals. Mm-hmm. And that can come from different kinds of plants that you're eating. It can definitely come from non-starchy vegetables, such as like a nice green salad or some steamed broccoli or some grilled asparagus or your favorite green beans, whatever you love. But that really also helps to lower the blood sugar response and keep you in a healthy range, as well as we know those non-starchy vegetables have so many incredible phytonutrients that are alkalizing to the body and are really feeding our cells for optimal health. Mm-hmm. Another one is hydrating well. And we don't often associate hydration with blood sugar, but if you were to think about if you were to drink poison and then you drank a bunch of water, you would be diluting the poison in your body, mm-hmm. right? And so it's similar with blood sugar. If we have something that is higher with a blood sugar hit that might throw us out of balance, right. Drinking water dilutes the blood, mm-hmm. so it will dilute the sugar as well.
Nice.
And especially if we include that in the form of like an electrolyte, for example, where we get lots of good minerals in there. Because minerals like magnesium, one of the primary minerals in electrolytes, really does actually help to lower blood sugar as well. Mm. Exercise is incredible for blood sugar because when our bodies are working out, we are going to basically burn some of that excess sugar, mm-hmm. and we will uptake, our muscles uptake the blood sugar or blood glucose for energy. So it actually helps to lower blood sugar. So if you eat a meal at the end of the day and then you take a little evening walk around your neighborhood in this beautiful spring weather that we're having,
yes.
then you know you can definitely watch your blood sugar if you're tracking it. You can see it go down just by, you know, an after dinner walk. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of things like that that we can do to really support our blood sugar. There's times of day where our metabolisms are working a little bit harder, especially in the mornings, mm-hmm. where we might notice that it's even more important to start our day off on the right foot with blood sugar. Mm-hmm. by eating something balanced for breakfast instead of what a lot of people do is kind of eat a grab and go carb type of a thing. Yeah. So when we start the day off on the right foot with a high protein, balanced breakfast and get our blood sugar working for us, we will just notice the rest of the day unfold so much better. So that's probably the last one, is just really keeping breakfast top of mind. Even if you're eating it later in the morning, that the first thing you're eating is really rock solid, stable for your blood sugar, and the rest of your day will unfold so much better.
So we all know that stress not only can be overwhelming, but you actually say that stress directly impacts the way that we eat as our bodies respond to the hormones cortisol and adrenaline. Can you tell us more about how stress impacts the way we eat and how our bodies respond differently to some of these things like cortisol?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think this is actually a really great question for people to hear about, because I don't think there's too many people talking about this out there. And I think it really helps people understand what's happening when they have a stress response. So there's two kinds of stress responses, really, two kinds of stress hormones, cortisol and adrenaline. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is we have people that are cortisol dominant. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have a higher response of cortisol than adrenaline most of the time. And then there's people that are adrenaline dominant. And when they go under stress, they might have higher adrenaline than cortisol. Mm-hmm. And what that really tells us, there's two things to really reveal here. And that is, if you have higher cortisol, cortisol tells you to eat. Cortisol cues you to want more food. It increases ghrelin and lowers leptin. So if you are somebody who's going through a stressful period and you find that comfort eating is something you're turning to, or you're thinking about food a lot, or you're craving things that are highly palatable, you're probably a cortisol dominant person on a constitutional level. Adrenaline, on the other hand, the other primary stress hormone, tends to shut down the appetite. It's a little bit more of a fast acting stress hormone, and it's really doing that because in the face of a danger such as a grizzly bear, we wouldn't want to be hungry, right? It would shut down our appetite, and it would give us all this energy to escape the grizzly bear or to fight for our lives or whatever we were doing. Yes. And so adrenaline, if that's higher for you, if you're an adrenaline dominant person, you might notice yourself losing your appetite when you get stressed. And some people kind of go back and forth between the two, depending on the type of situation they're in. So those two stress hormones really impact our blood sugar and our hunger and fullness, and really kind of can help us understand more what's happening inside of our bodies when we're under stress.
That's amazing. How can we start to combat this stress and improve our mood? Because mood is all related to this as well. It seems like eating can improve this and vice versa.
Sometimes, yes. And I think if we're eating mindfully, then we can definitely choose foods that are going to help bring us back into balance and that are going to feed our good neurotransmitters and feed our brains for good health and for feeling happier. But there's also this aspect of trying to diminish stress, which I think is kind of tough to do sometimes when we don't feel like we have control of an external situation. And I know for me, there's been times when I've been going through things like that, and trying to diminish the stress wasn't really the best way at it because it was happening. The only thing that I could really work with was my response to it. But what I learned is that the hormone oxytocin is the anti-stress hormone. And when I uncovered that and how impactful that can be on our metabolisms and on some of those cravings and some of the ways our stress hormones can kind of take over our lives, it felt like that was a place that I had some control. That was a place that I had some agency. I can add more pleasure. I can add more connection. I think that we can use pleasure and all the different things that we do to create more oxytocin in our bodies, because oxytocin will lower cortisol and adrenaline and will help us bring ourselves back into balance. And of course, we can also see that that's more fun because we love feeling good, right?
Right.
We love the ways that oxytocin can help. So it really can kind of do a little bit for us rather than thinking that we have to get rid of the stress.
So what are some things that we can do to release oxytocin? Are there any things that will trigger that?
Absolutely. So there's a lot of different behaviors that boost oxytocin. And some of the most well-known ones are like connection with other people. So even just calling a girlfriend on the telephone has been shown to boost oxytocin.
Nice.
Laughter boosts oxytocin. Touch, like hugs, boost oxytocin. Puppies boost oxytocin. Orgasms boost oxytocin.
So I interrupted you over the one that everyone wants to hear the most, but I would think music is a big oxytocin improver.
Absolutely.
Right?
Music, movement, dancing, anything that brings us joy,
yes.
Really. And
nice.
I'm just, the dark chocolate is a food that is known to boost oxytocin.
Yes.
So there's lots of things we can do. Even just going outside and being in nature, you know, having a beautiful bouquet of flowers in our office boosts our oxytocin.
There it is.
So lots of things we can do. There's lots of things we can do that might feel like we have a little bit more control in that area of our lives when we're going through something challenging.
That's awesome. Thank you for that. That's so interesting. What is embodied eating? And why do you recommend that people give that a try, Sue? Embodied eating. I just love even that, just that visual.
Thank you. Yes. So the way that I define embodied eating is being in real time with our eating experience. And really, embodied living is similar. Like, we are embodied, meaning we're experiencing what it is that's going on in the body through sensation. Mm-hmm. So as we eat, can we be in real time with the experience of eating? Mm-hmm. And it might seem like, well, maybe we can, but if we actually start to think about what we're doing when we sit down to eat, or maybe we don't sit down at all, many of us are rushing through it. Many of us are totally distracted. Many of us are absolutely not paying attention to what we're eating or how we're eating. We might be sitting in front of the television. We might be standing over the kitchen sink. You know, there's so many ways that we find ourselves inhaling food sometimes on a busy day, or eating while we're driving. All these different ways that we find. And this does not require us to be perfect. There's definitely times where I will have something to eat while I'm driving. So it's not about perfection, but it is about presence. And it's about learning to be present with what's going on in relationship to the food we're eating. How are we eating? Are we eating fast? Can we slow it down? Are we tasting our food? Are we chewing our food? Are we tracking our hunger and fullness in our bodies? Or are we just completely so far away from that internal experience that we don't really know what we need and want? And I think that the benefit of embodied eating is really a much more intimate relationship with food and with how we're taking in the food. And as soon as we start to slow it down, become more mindful, watch the different cues and sensations that are arising in our bodies, once again, we gain so much information that can help us navigate how we are moving through our meals.
That's great. That's such a great, great advice. You talk about how you were trying cold water scuba diving for the first time in BC, British Columbia, and you couldn't relax your breathing. It took holding your instructor Don's hand as you dived to help you relax as you practice. And before you knew it, you were doing a 60-foot dive. Wow. All on your own. You compare this to exploring your inner world for the first time. Listening to our bodies, exploring our inner world can feel like a vast sea and might leave you literally short of breath. Can you tell us about the body scan and how we can start diving into feeling and noticing our inner landscape?
Yes, I find that going internal with ourselves for a lot of folks, especially women, is foreign and is daunting and is something that can feel a little scary and overwhelming. And it really does remind me of that sort of vast ocean that's underneath the ocean floor that's like just giving us so much mystery. And so as we start to descend into the deeper layers of ourselves, it's nice to feel like we have a hand to hold, or it's nice to feel like we have support or it's nice to feel like we can do it little by little and start to get more and more comfortable with ourselves. Mm-hmm. So many times the women that I work with are sharing to me that they have never in their recollection really gone inward and noticed what's going on the inside. And there's lots of different ways that people are exploring that now that are a lot more popular, like meditation and yoga and some of the things that are becoming much more mainstream, which is really great news. But when we start to apply that to our eating, we can really gain so much information about what we need. And so I just kind of wanted to give people permission to do it slowly and to just acknowledge that these feelings of uncertainty and things feeling unfamiliar and a little daunting, that they're absolutely normal, but that we can titrate our way into a deeper relationship with ourselves. And it's really a valuable experience and tool to have that deep connection with self. Our relationship to our inner world is so important in this work.
Absolutely. And in all work, in all living, is so important. So this is like so great for our show. Not to put you on the spot, Sue, but can you lead us through a mini body scan or just like a little slice of what a body scan would look and sound like?
Absolutely. That would be such an honor. So when I start a body scan, I just want to kind of, you know, give you a moment to settle in, because it's nice to kind of drop inward for a moment. Mm-hmm. So let's just start by taking a few deep breaths, closing your eyes if that's available to you, and just noticing any sensations that are standing out in your inner experience, in your inner world. So that might be something just like the pressure of your back leaning against your chair, or it might just be how the fabric of your clothing is touching your skin, or it might be that you notice pressure in your chest or heat in your belly. Noticing the sensation simply of your own breath as you inhale through your nose and exhale through your nose. You might also have a taste on your tongue from the last sip that you took or the last bite of food that you enjoyed. You might notice that you can take in a scent that's coming from your environment, maybe some flowers that are sitting on your desk or something simmering on the stovetop or some incense burning. And can you notice clenching or tension or tightness or any kind of fluttering happening inside your body? Do you feel pressure anywhere in your body? Do you notice temperature? Are you maybe hungry or thirsty? Can you give yourself a couple moments to scan your body for the sensations that are the loudest? Maybe your heart beating or your stomach grumbling. Anything that jumps out and catches your attention. And then when you're ready, just start to bring yourself back with a soft gaze. And this is a body scan that you can do anytime you have a moment.
That was amazing. Thank you. I felt tension in my shoulders, and by you making me aware of that, I just said shoulders relaxing, shoulders relax, and they relax more. Mm. That's really amazing. Great. I feel like I just had a 20-minute meditation in that short body scan. It's very powerful.
It really is. And, you know, there's so many ways to do it. Like, you could do that in the shower, mm-hmm. or you could do that just for a couple of moments when you sit down to the table, Or you could do that at a red light and you don't even have to close your eyes. And it really is informative with what's going on in our bodies. And when we know what's going on in our bodies, we can take better care of ourselves, right? Like if you noticed that you needed a sip of water in that body scan, which I do, which I'll have, but you know, it's like, take a sip of water,
yes,
get yourself hydrated. And these little tiny aspects of knowing really can inform our actions and help us to be better tended to.
Yes. Just beautiful, beautiful stuff. Thank you very much for that, Sue. That was wonderful. I'm going to say right now, even though, because I know we're coming towards the end and I have like another 30 questions. So I'm going to say that we have to have you back again for sure for a part two.
But, of course.
But just briefly, I mean, so many things in the book, guys, like that there are five flavors. I bet you all thought there were only four flavors, but there's a fifth one and it's pungent, right? It's the one no one ever thinks of. So yeah, there's just so much good stuff in here. Just briefly, what is the best way to overcome food coping skills such as comfort eating, food restriction, and food perfectionism?
Before we hear Sue's answer, we're going to go on a short commercial break and more with Finding Your Bliss and Sue Van Raes when we come back. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, we're back. This is Finding Your Bliss. And I was just asking you, Sue, what are some of the best ways to overcome food perfectionism?
I think that most of the time when we are looking at these behaviors, we really need to go deeper. So what we're seeing in an experience that is a reaction around food, whether it's restriction or binging or anything in between, or even like that very type A perfectionistic approach, notice the behavior, but just trying to change the behavior from the outside in isn't always going to be as effective. Mm-hmm. My question is, why is that behavior happening? And what's going on underneath of that behavior that is triggering the behavior? Where is there an unease, or where is there stress, or where is there something going on that needs attention? And so when we start to look at it that way, we see these behaviors as a symptom instead of the problem. And so getting down to those deeper layers within ourselves is the most important place to start when we're trying to repair some of the behaviors that are out of balance around food.
Mm-hmm. Lovely.
I could go on and on, but I don't
want to take up our last couple minutes. there's so much here. And I did promise you all that I was going to tell you and ask, of course, Sue about this, the personal recipe. And I adore this, that you create for people on how to step into their own inner kitchen for a moment and how you suggest they take a long breath in and a deep sigh out, like we did off the top of the show. And you give some wonderful writing prompts. You write this recipe by looking at the four primary parts of yourself, your body, your mind, your heart, and your soul. Starting with the body, you say, you ask, what do I need to be nourished? In the mind, you ask the reader to look at the quality of their thoughts. What does my mind need to be more clear, free, supportive, and kind, quote. And you bring the heart into this, asking, what does my heart need to be fed with more love and joy? It goes on and on. And one of my favorite questions, which is part of a beautiful chapter, I think it's the fourth chapter, Bring Your Soul to the Table, is where you ask yourself, what does my soul need to be at peace? And then you give lots and lots of prompts and delicious suggestions for each of these four for people to come up with their own template. I wanted to ask you about each one individually, but can you just talk maybe just about the soul or about the one that resonates for you the most? and how powerful this exercise is in making your own bespoke, custom tailored, personalized sort of recipe for yourself on how to live more healthfully.
Yes, thank you so much for this question. I do believe that we really do have our own personal recipes for how we can live our best lives, and it looks different for everyone. And so one of the things that I didn't want to do in this book is act as though there was a one-way approach, because I don't believe there's a one-way approach. I believe that there's our own unique way, and that is what we want to uncover here. So with all of the different layers of what we explored in the book, there's so many different pieces and ingredients that I wanted people to kind of see them all on the page and come to the ability to choose what really stood out most for them to build their own personal recipe. Mm-hmm. And within what I would say, I think you and I agree on this, my favorite is really looking at the soulful qualities that we can really fill up on. Because when our souls are at peace and we are satiated on a soul level, I feel like there is so much more ease in working through the other layers of our life, because we are just fulfilled in a different way. Mm-hmm. So that might mean, are we spending enough time in nature? Can we sync up with nature? Can we sync up with the season? Can we listen to our own internal rhythm and start to honor that? Can we track these different ways in which nature impacts us? Can we live with more soulfulness by creating more ritual in our lives, or more devotion? Can we see ourselves as the divine goddess that we are? Can we choose sensory experiences that really light us up? Can we discover the places in our life where maybe we're not living into our soul's potential or our deepest desires or our dreams? Can we create more beauty in our lives by tending to our environment or setting the table? Mm-hmm. Or making our eating more sacred. And another one that's really big is, can we align our eating with our souls? And when I am in alignment with my soul and my eating, you know, it really brings me so much more inspiration, so much more gratitude, so much more inner peace, because I feel like everything is sort of starting to come into alignment in my life and in my health. And there's one little part of the book that I think is really fun, which is identifying our soulful superfoods, the things that light us up the most, and the places that we really, you know, kind of heighten our inner experience. And when we start to live from there, it really does impact every single part of our lives. So that's a really fun part of the experience.
Lovely. I know we have to wrap momentarily, but I was fascinated by this because I'm a big yoga person, and you have some beautiful, beautiful prompts and diagrams of yoga sequences, entire sun salutations and moon salutations, and it just makes it all very doable for people who don't do it or maybe need a little refresh. Briefly, how can yoga help us find more peace, joy, and love in our lives?
Ooh, yes. Well, everyone has their own path, and yoga may not be the path for everyone, and that is absolutely fine. But for me, and for a lot of the people that I know in the yoga world, it is one of the quickest ways to come home to ourselves. It is one of the most impactful ways to become more embodied. Yeah, and it really does bring us into presence, bring us into mindfulness, help us align with our higher selves. And when that is happening, the choices that we're making in our days are going to be more aligned with us as well. And so for me, yoga has so many different important roles in my life, but it's an opportunity just to deepen our relationship with self. Mm-hmm. And that's so priceless. So either yoga or something else, whatever your way is, if you're finding a way to deepen your relationship with yourself, you're on the right track.
It's lovely. One of your longtime teachers has been Deepak Chopra. Wow. What is the greatest thing that you've learned from Deepak?
Oh, gosh. Wow. What I love about Deepak is that he is the most profoundly educated and experienced in both spirituality and science. Mm. And listening to him talk and learning from his teachings, for me, being someone who really is actually similar to, I have similar passions. Like, I have the science passion and I have the spirituality passion. and the soulful passion. And so there's very few people I've ever met in my life that can speak to both of those different aspects in the most profound and knowledgeable ways, and also connect them to each other. Mm-hmm. And so I've really learned that it's really given me permission to bring that into my work more fully, to be honest. And that's been such a gift.
What a gift. What a gift. You have a business called Boulder Nutrition. Tell us briefly about that.
Yes. So Boulder Nutrition started off as my brick and mortar private practice 20 years ago. And over time, it's evolved into a lot of different things, including I work with people all over the world. So I have a private practice that I see people locally and remotely. And I have some online courses within Boulder Nutrition to help people work at their own pace or do work in a group. And I also lead retreats for women locally in Colorado and internationally. Oh, and of course, you know, I have a small podcast called Satiate.
That was my next question. Yes.
Yeah. And I love interviewing, similar to you, like amazing women and getting lots of new information out there. So that's another passion of mine. But yeah, Boulder Nutrition is basically my business, and it's evolved alongside of me through all these years. And it is such a gift to be able to work with people so closely.
Wonderful. I think the people are going to be very lucky. And I think that everybody should get this beautiful book, Food and Freedom. What is the greatest golden nugget, Sue, that you'd like people to get from the book?
Well, I would like to say that we kind of talked about this at the beginning. If we can really focus on our relationship to self as a priority, just like we would focus on any other relationship that we think of as important in our lives, if we were thinking of our partners or our kids or our family members or our best friend, we would show up, we would listen, we would check in, we would tend to, we would care, we would help them along. You know, we would spend our time being in a loving presence with those people that we care so much about, but we often forget to do that with ourselves. And I think that's a very beautiful starting point, is to start to really put ourselves at the top of our own to-do lists so that we can take care of the most important relationship that we have.
There's a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show. So of course, I'm going to ask it to you. What is bliss for Sue Van Raes?
Oh, goodness, bliss. For me, I can access the most high levels of bliss when I am in nature. And when I'm in nature and I can drop the stories that tend to swirl in my mind, or the places that I can get sort of stuck on when I'm rushing around or busy, when I get into the woods or in close to the ocean and I can just be in the quiet space within myself and really connect with my soul, I find that there's not much more that I need than that. Simple, nature-based presence. And it really cleanses my whole being. And so that's where I find the most joy and the most bliss.
That's lovely. What is the best way for people to contact you and connect with you on social media? And of course, to get a copy of your beautiful book, Food and Freedom.
Thank you. So I mostly am on Instagram, and you can find me at Boulder Nutrition there. And then my website is bouldernutrition.com, and that's B-O-U-L, like the town, Boulder, Colorado, nice. Boulder Nutrition. You can find everything that I do there. And of course, there is a link for the book as well, but the book is also in all the other bookstores and places that most books are found. So yes, and there is a free giveaway on my website. If you go to bouldernutrition.com and you go to the tab that says free, you can download a little guide that I wrote called Make Peace with Your Plate, 5 Daily Practices to Cultivate Food and Body Freedom. And there's recipes in there too. So that's a fun little taster of my work.
I love that. Well, I have to tell you, and I don't say this after every show, but I can really say this to you, honestly, this has truly been blissful for me to interview you and to bring your beautiful book to more people, because it's just some wonderful, well thought out, loving, great, great information and great research and great work. So congratulations and thank you so much. Namaste.
Thank you so much, Judy. I am so happy to be here with you, and it's been such a joy to have this conversation.
Ditto. Thank you so much. Each week, we spotlight a fabulous person like Sue Van Raes, who is living their bliss. So if you are a celebrity, a therapist, life coach, author, yoga, meditation, or mindfulness expert, or really anyone who has found and is following their bliss, we would love to hear from you. You can write to us at fyb@findingyourbliss.com. And for those of you who don't know, I'm also the bliss coach. That means I will help you find your bliss. If you want to get some help on getting unstuck, gaining clarity, and finding your passion and purpose, just reach out to me at findyourbliss.com/coaching. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. In today's episode, I was very fortunate to have Sue lead us in a body scan meditation, which is going to be available as exclusive bonus footage right after this show airs. You can find this bonus content on all major podcast streaming platforms, and very soon it will also be available on our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/@findingyourblissradio. You can also just search up on YouTube, Finding Your Bliss episodes. I'd like to thank our wonderful guest, Sue Van Rays, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, producer Olivia Weatherall, audio engineer Juliana Yannizziello, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. For everyone here, I'm Judy Lee Brack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.